Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Scott Busser of Mosley, Busser & Appleton here on behalf of Morgan Corporation and Zurich American. This is a workers' compensation matter involving injuries claimed by Mr. Landis. The facts of this case are essentially not in dispute. There is no dispute that Mr. Landis was working for his employer at a time and in a location that he was supposed to. There's no dispute that he was performing his normal work activities on the date of the injury. There's no dispute that he went to lunch that day with a co-employee. No dispute that he came back. No dispute that a few minutes after coming back, he was found on the floor of the Morgan Corporation's garage, bleeding from the head, blood on the concrete floor, apparently having some sort of seizure, according to his co-worker, Steve Tatman. There were no tools in his hands nor near his body. There is no evidence that there were any cords or hoses anywhere near his feet or arms. Mr. Landis was taken to the hospital and received medical attention. Mr. Landis, unfortunately, as a result of the blow he took to the head, has absolutely no memory of what he was doing immediately before he became incapacitated, has no memory of the incident itself. There were no eyewitnesses. The closest thing there is to a witness is Mr. Tatman, who observed Mr. Landis after the incident. The parties took this matter to hearing in front of Administrative Law Judge Haar, and my clients admitted that the injury occurred within the course and scope, time and location where he was supposed to be working. My clients disputed the arising out of requirement. We asserted that he sustained an unexplained fall. And in the absence of an explanation for the fall, he could not satisfy the arising out of requirement under the Workers' Compensation Act, and therefore the claim should have been denied. The parties put on accident reconstruction expert testimony. Mr. Smith on behalf of claimant, Dr. Katina on behalf of the respondents below. We also presented medical evidence, partly in the form of medical records from his treating doctors, partly in the form of a report from Dr. Chang, who did a records review for my clients, and a deposition of Dr. Chang. Dr. Chang, as the brief and the record set forth, said that he could not, within any degree of probability, say exactly what happened. Whether he fell, the mechanism of fall, well, he did fall, but where he fell, whether he fell from a height, whether he fell from the standing position, what precipitated the fall.
Let me ask you one question. I understand that the ALJ made findings that Dr. Chang said it was consistent with a fall from a height. So are we bound by those findings?
Yeah, it's consistent. It's also consistent, as Dr. Chang testified, with the fall from standing position. And Dr. Chang, who was credited by the ALJ, also testified that it was what he considered a non-mechanical fall. And Dr. Chang explained at length the difference between a mechanical and a non-mechanical. And his testimony centered primarily on whether there was any sort of defensive or postural wounds. Best example being, I think we've all slipped on ice and nearly fallen or fallen. And the first instinct anybody has as they start to go down is to extend an arm or to crumple to the knees, something to try to break the fall to keep from being hurt. And Dr. Chang's testimony was, there were no such indications. As noted, the ALJ credited Dr. Chang, completely discredited both accident reconstruction experts. He then entered the order, which is the subject of this appeal, where in which he said, well, it could have happened from falling from a ladder, could have happened from falling from the lift gate of the truck in which Mr. Landis had been working that day, could have fallen while transitioning between the ladder and the truck, could have stumbled and fallen while going to receive a tool or to obtain a tool. Because there were instrumentalities that could have caused injury, ladders, hoses, cords, tools, truck, he concluded that the injury arose from his employment and compensated the claim. We took the position that that was speculative, that there is no finding as to what actually transpired. There's no finding as to what happened to Mr. Landis. All we know is Mr. Landis was found on the employer's premises, bleeding from the head.
Professor,
yes.
Explanation. ALJ said it could have been any number of these things. I think he listed four, if memory serves me right.
Lift gate, ladder, transitioning, and something on the ground.
Wasn't there evidence presented about whether he could have fallen simply because he was experiencing some kind of TIA, transient ischemic attack?
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't the ALJ reject that?
The ALJ rejected a TIA. That was one of the possibilities identified by Dr. Chang. Dr. Chang had identified a number of possibilities.
My question to you is, with the fact that the ALJ rejected that testimony, that it could have been or rejected the idea that it could have been some kind of transient ischemic attack, mean that essentially the claimant proved a negative? It couldn't have been this, and therefore it must have been one of these others.
No, Your Honor. I mean, any number of things. For example, Mr. Landis had gotten back from lunch. We don't know whether he could have felt ill after having lunch. There was testimony that he generally wore boots. For all we know, he could have bent over to tie his shoelace, stood back up, felt lightheaded, and fallen over. There's just as much evidence to support that sort of finding as there was for what Judge Haar did. Not to carry it to the extreme, but for example, the Supreme Court in the Industrial Commission versus Lennon and Lancashire case had a situation where a claimant was found on the ground outside of a window, dead. And there had been the argument advanced, well, it could have been a suicide. You don't know. He could have fallen or it could have been a suicide. Likewise here, you could have said he just fell over, he deliberately injured himself, or he injured himself doing something work-related. There is just as much evidence to support any of those propositions.
Well, in that case, as well as in the Finn case, which I think you rely upon as well, we had a determination by the ALJ that's contrary to the determination that the ALJ made here. The ALJ said there's no sufficient proof of how this happened, therefore it's not compensable. But here we have the ALJ saying, well, there's a number of things that it could be, and I'm going to credit that it's one of them, even though the evidence doesn't conclusively tell me. And isn't that mean we've got to give some deference to that finding? Because it really is an issue of fact, isn't it?
No, I think here issues of fact would be he was injured. Time, place, the injuries he sustained. Those are absolutely within the province of the ALJ and are entitled to deference. However, the conclusion as to whether his fall was unexplained or not, I believe that that's a legal determination for the judge and a determination for this court to review. And when you look at the facts as found by Judge Haar and as contained in the record, for example, he had several findings where he addressed the presence of an air hose, I believe the term he used was snaking over the lift gate, or a power cord, but I think it was primarily an air hose assist the operation of the wrench that Mr. Landis was using. But there's no in this courtroom, there are cables in this courtroom. If I were to fall down right now, you could say, yes, there were cables that I could have tripped over. I could, I might not. It's the exact same situation with regards to Mr. Landis.
Mr. Besser, let me just ask you, is there a distinction? Because I know that you cannot just presume something is arising out of employment.
Yes, Your Honor.
But what we have here is an ALJ identifying circumstances and making an inference based on those circumstances. Can an ALJ do that?
An ALJ can draw inferences from the evidence. However, if Judge Hart had said he was in close proximity, he was found with a socket wrench in his hand next to the toolbox, okay, that might be enough evidence to support the inference that he tripped on the toolbox. If he was found with the air hose tangled around his foot, that would be more than a mere scintilla of evidence to support the inference that he tripped on the air hose. Here we have none of that. If Judge Hart had said he was found 1 foot away from the ladder and his left foot was on the bottom rung of the ladder, that would have been more than a mere scintilla. We have none of that. If Judge Hart had simply found that one is more likely than another, those are all possibilities. And as I noted, and as the late Kurt Crichton found, any number of things could have happened. And it's all speculation as to what actually happened. And where there's speculation, there's no preponderance and no arising out of. And I think the court can look at the physical evidence and make findings. But as to whether ultimately there is a cause, an explanation, I note approximately a couple of months ago, a different division of this court, I believe it was the Hingle case, where the employer and insurer were arguing for an unexplained fall. And I don't recall off the top of my head as to whether that was a published or non-published, but it was one where the claimant experienced, I believe, a leg injury while walking across carpet and argued that it was unexplained. But there the judge said, well, it was very clear. The claimant was doing something that was work-related and sustained injury while performing that work task, and that was enough to satisfy the arising out of requirement. Here, we don't know. Was he working? Was he performing a work task at the time such that his injuries arose from his employment? We don't know. Did he just have an episode related to his diabetes? Was it self-inflicted? We don't know. We just don't know. And I think that lack of knowledge the presence of that uncertainty is reflected by Judge Haar saying, well, it could have been this, it could have been this, it could have been this. I don't know. And that, therefore, it is truly an unexplained fall. And as an unexplained fall, then it has to be denied for failing to meet the arising out of requirement. The court has no additional questions. I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Judge Lichtenstein, may it please the court. I am Ralph Ogden here on behalf of Willis Landis. With me on the brief is Carrie Sullivan at counsel table. We are asking the court to affirm the judgment of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office and of the administrative law judge. This is a very simple, very straightforward case in which respondents are challenging factual findings by an administrative law judge. And those findings are supported by the record, and they have to be affirmed. The challenge has got to be rejected. The whole thrust of the argument is that the fall was unexplained. And this ignores the factual findings by Judge Haar that the fall was not unexplained and that it was more probably than not caused by one of the hazards of claimant's employment and therefore arose out of the employment relationship. In one of his other factual findings, Judge Haar found that the fall was not idiopathic, that it was not precipitated by a stroke, that it was not precipitated by dizziness or some other pre-existing condition of the claimant, and that it was not precipitated by a TIA. The evidence supports this finding, and even respondent's physician, Dr. Chang, said that there was no medical evidence of any of these conditions that the claimant suffered or that might have caused the fall. And I might note, I disagree with something that Mr. Busser said about Judge Haar's crediting of Dr. Chang's testimony. He credited two parts of it and two parts only in his findings of fact. He said that I credit the part where he said there is no medical evidence that this was caused by that the fall was idiopathic or caused by a TIA or something else. And I credit the part where he said it is consistent with the fall from the height. He rejected all of the rest of Dr. Chang's testimony. Judge Haar then drew a reasonable inference that if one of these factors, TIA, idiopathic fall, stroke, or some other non-work-related condition didn't cause the fall, the reasonable inference is that what's left is that it was a work-related factor that did cause the fall. There's two possibilities, the idiopathic TIA-type fall or something caused by work conditions, by hazard of the employment. So if he makes a factual finding that it wasn't unexplained or that it wasn't idiopathic, that only leaves the option that it was work-related.
To me, that counsel would differ with you on two ways to go. I say there's a third way to go, explained.
Well, but the judge didn't find that. The judge found that it was explained. I think what Mr. Busser said was that the evidence was equal. You could find that he fell while he was tying his shoe, or you could find that he fell as a result of one of these employment hazards. And I believe I'm correctly stating what he said. If indeed that's the case, you have to affirm, because it's the judge's responsibility to parse the evidence, to weigh the evidence, and decide what evidence he finds credible and will make his findings on. After Judge Haar drew the inference that it wasn't idiopathic, he made the factual finding that the fall occurred while he was performing a work-related activity, which is, again, I think, the other alternative. Respondents, I think, implicitly concede this point when they concede that the fall occurred in the course of employment. There's absolutely no evidence that claimant was on some frolic and detour or doing something that he shouldn't have been doing at the time of the fall.
Counsel?
Yes.
On the frolic or detour, maybe in a little more narrow, I'm not sure, but you said something about tying a shoe. What if he bent down to tie a shoe and fell and hit his head? Let's not get in. Accept the ALJ's finding that it wasn't caused by dizziness. Would that be compensable?
I think it would.
What if it happened while he was on the way to the bathroom?
Yes, it would be compensable. There, I can't give you the site, but there are some industrial claim appeals office decisions where the claimant was injured while actually using the toilet. And they held that going to the bathroom and taking bathroom breaks is a normal part of the workday. And I think there's an earlier opinion in the 50s by this court that an employee who was injured while taking a lunch break on the employer's premises is injured in the scope and course of employment because the employer provided the lunchroom facilities and the lunch break was a normal part of the workday.
Mr. Ogden, is there a distinction between something being in the course of employment and something arising out of a work-related activity?
Yes.
And so are your examples, do they apply to both prongs there, or is it only to in the course of employment?
They apply to both prongs, Your Honor. I mean, in each of the cases that I cited, the finding was that the injury was compensable. In the lunchroom cases, in the bathroom cases, those were all held to be compensable, so the claimant satisfied both prongs of the test.
So if one of the options that the ALJ said he simply could have been walking across the floor, that was still in the course of employment and arising out of a work-related activity?
Yes, I think so.
Doesn't that come perilously close to the person is in?
I think it does come close to that presumption.
How do we decide where that dividing line is?
I don't think you need to. I think that's, again, that raises a factual question for the judge to decide. In this case, he said that it wasn't. I guess I'm saying I don't think you need to address that question in this case. The judge said that it wasn't idiopathic and that it was more probably than not one of the enumerated hazards of the employment. So the presumption issue, he's saying it is not an unexplained fall. The claimant wasn't injured when he was simply walking across the floor and fell. So I think that question isn't necessary for a decision in this case. Are there any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Before I address Mr. Ogden's comments, Judge Miller, you asked about an individual who was just simply tying a shoe and fell over. I don't believe that it meets the arising out of requirement with one caveat. It would depend on what the individual struck in the course of the fall. If the individual merely was tying the shoe, stood up, felt dizzy, fell, and hit the ground, that would be that would fall into the ubiquitous condition line of cases from the Gates, I believe it was the Gates Rubber Company case from 1985, that there was no inherently work-related connection, and therefore the arising out of requirement isn't satisfied. If you were tying the shoe and felt dizzy, fell over, and struck the edge of a table, the presence of the table would be a work hazard, and therefore there would be a sufficient nexus to satisfy the arising out of requirement. That, in fact, I believe that's what the parties both recognized inherent in the arising out of argument before the ALJ, given the extensive testimony and argument as to whether there was where the claimant was when he fell and why he fell. And I see that my time is up.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.